Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Deep Three podcast. Today's guest is Elston Turner Jr., Texas A&M alum. I wouldn't say alum. You're like a Hall of Famer over there. I mean, you were there for 2 years.
Hall of Famer, man. No Hall of Famer, but, you know, I had some good times there, though. Had a couple good games.
A couple good games? Is that what Kentucky says, too?
Hey, they Kentucky will say that was luck, but, I mean – You can call it what it is. I say it's a good game.
Yeah, man. So I'm excited to have you on, man, because, you know, since you came from Greece, we talked a lot about basketball. We used to talk NBA and stuff. You know, of course, I mean, your dad's an NBA coach.
Yeah.
You know, so basketball is in your blood, right? And I was, you know, when I first came to the team, you know, like, we didn't know what to expect, right? So, like, once you start hooping, you can see guys that have a basketball background, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Well, as soon as you came to the team, it would be easy for you to play with us, to gel, just because your basketball IQ, right? I mean, you just read things differently, and it was, to me, it was cool. You know, I thought we needed that. Unfortunately, we could have finished the season because I thought we could have made some noise, and things were just clicking. But how have you been, man, just training and – that's it? Just stay in shape for next season?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what I've been doing, you know. Like you said, didn't get to finish the season out in Greece. I wish we would have because, like you said, I felt like we had a great group of guys. And, you know, we all bought into the system. And I feel like, you know, we would have made some type of a run, you know, for the playoffs. And, you know, we were going to get hot at the right time. And I feel like that would have – That it's a shame because I felt like we were going to do something special for that year. But yeah, man, I'm just, you know, I'm in here in Houston and I was trying to stay in shape, do as much as I can to stay in shape and just to stay ready for wherever I'm going to end up for this next upcoming season.
Gotcha. So I'm going to rewind a little bit because I know you went to Washington first and then you transferred to Texas A&M, right?
Yeah.
So I've been through the same kind of situation where I went to Mason and I transferred in. Same thing like you. It worked out for me, right? So I just want to, mm-hmm. you know, take me through that. Like, why did you transfer? Because everybody right now talks about the transfer culture. You know, why do kids transfer so much? And, you know, I know my reasons. So I just want to see, you know, what was going through your mind then, you know, when you went to a great school, you know, Washington. But, like, why did you thought that transferring was your best option?
Well, for me, you know, we had, you know, we were a really, really talented school. We had so many, you know, we had so many great players. I came in with the same class as Isaiah Thomas, and we came into that school already having Justin Dittman, Quincy Pondexter, Justin Holiday, John Brockman. Like we had so many players that, you know, still are playing professionally right now, to where my role was really just to sit in the corner, you know, and if I was get the ball, just knock the shot down. And, you know, it got to the point to where anything else besides that, I felt so uncomfortable doing. You know, I've always been a scorer. I've always been able to handle the ball. You know, I played point guard all, you know, three out of the 4 years in high school, even in AAU. So being able to switch into like just to being a regular spot of a shooter kind of, you know, it kind of slowed my progression up. And I just remember after we lost in the NCAA tournament my sophomore year, I ended up talking to my dad and, you know, we were just talking about my next move because I just felt like I wasn't utilizing my potential and showing everybody what I could do offensively as well as defensively, but just being on the floor in general. And, you know, we came to the conclusion that I had to transfer somewhere to where they were going to let me show my skills. Because if I would have stayed in Washington and just been that spot-up shooter role, I guarantee you I wouldn't be to where I am today. And so I think me transferring, it changed my basketball career completely.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it was the same for me too. So I just feel like, you know, I love the school, but, you know, it wasn't working out.
Yeah.
For what I want to do after, right? I mean, I want to play pro. You probably want to play pro. So it was like, you know, what am I doing?
Yeah. Well, I mean, because it got to the point. It got to the point to where, you know, I would go back and watch some of the games and I'd occasionally, you know, make a play off the dribble and get to the basket and lay it up. And then I hear the announcer saying, you know, oh, he's not used to doing that. You know, he's a spot-up shooter. And I'm like, man. Look, you know, show my high school.
Still my confidence.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it also is a mind game, you know, because once you go a year or two without having that role, it took a minute. So I had to use my redshirt year to get all of my, you know, get all my tools back. I got into the gym and started working on pick and roll, started working on post up, started working on, you know, isolation and just being able to score besides, you know, just catch and shoot and coming off the screens. And that's why I said, you know, that redshirt year is probably the most crucial year of my life, because, you know, you're not playing games. So you had to focus on literally, you know, your game individually and then academically, and that's it. You know, that was your whole year was dedicated to that. And that's why what I said. It's just, that was the turning point of my basketball career right there, was my redshirt year.
Yeah. I mean, I say the same too. When I transferred, that was it. You know, I was like, okay. I was kind of same situation. I think just different, you know, position on the floor. But, you know, just purely stretch forward. And I was like, I want to do more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was one of the things that when I transferred, I was like, I want to go somewhere where they're going to let me play. Like, I was like, don't, you know. And when I had a call, it was like NC State. And I was like, nah, they're going to put me right back in that box. You know, I was like, I can't go that level and just do that same thing. To go down, you know, it's like,
yeah,
down level. And I was like, all right, just let me do what I do. Let me get better, you know, let me get stronger. And then, you know, that really turned around for me, I think. You know, and like I saw, you scored a bunch of points, you know, it was like that's why I saw a lot of similarities when I was looking at that. And then once you turn pro, did that approach change at all? Or like once you found that group in college, you kind of just, because.
Well, not.
You know how it is in Europe, so.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't change. It kind of heightened, because you know how it is over there to be in Europe and to be an American guard, like you have to score. That's like, you know, 80-90% of the time.
So you were in heaven.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. You know, you have, like, that's your job. You know, if you're not scoring, especially some places, you know, you have one or two bad games, they're thinking about sending you home. So, it adds pressure, and it adds pressure to your game to perfect your craft and do what you're good at. You know, you're not going to go over to a team in, you know, in Europe and try stuff that you haven't done.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So, and teams know that, you know, they pick you for a reason, and some teams don't. But for me, yeah, it was as soon as I – went to Italy for my rookie year, it was like, I gotta score. That's the only way I'm gonna keep my job. I gotta put up as much points as possible. And you know, win or lose.
Yeah, you're about 17, right?
My rookie year, yeah. In Pesaro, we had all rookies, man. So like, it was honestly a fun time, but it was no expectations, because nobody thought we were gonna be, you know, good anyway. We had all rookies and you know, playing against them big teams like Milan and Bologna and Brindisi, you know, it was tough. But that being said, like you said, I got to, you know, just play stress-free and have fun. And that's why I was able to score, you know, 17 points a game.
Yeah, I mean, you had a good time in Italy. And I know we talked about it, how much you like that league and how much you like the life in Italy. So is it any point even asking you what your favorite league is, or –
you got me right there. It's definitely, I've played in three and a half leagues. But I would say, you know, Italy is probably my number one, just because, you know, I'm so used to it. You know, I know pretty much all the Italian players, pretty much, you know, most of the Italian coaches, all the refs. It's just something I'm used to. You know, I guess I tell people all the time, it's my second home. So, you know, we speak the language. You know, I mean, I know me and you have talked about, you know, just being out there and being able to speak the language. And, you know, I love Italy. And, you know, if I ever have an opportunity to play there again, you know, I'd be honored. I can't wait. So, but yeah, I would go Italy. Germany was all right as well.
I was gonna say, what was the difference as far as like playing style? I played in Italy. I don't know how it is. Just compare Italy to Germany and maybe Greece a little bit.
I would say Germany was the most physical league I've been in. As far as physicality, Germany was very physical because, you know, they would have them big 7-foot Germans just moving screens. And you know, and every time you get hit with a screen, you're looking at the ref like, and the ref's looking at you like, you know, you got to get up. You know, you have to get up. It's a legal screen. For that aspect, I would say Germany is probably the most physical league. Italy, I think, has the most skill. And then Greece, I would say it's a combination of the two. You know how it is in Greece. It's very physical. We were just fortunate to be on the most physical team of the league. So, you know what I mean? We brought the physicality to that game.
We made it.
Exactly. I got a couple of my friends that we played against, and they're always telling me, man, we used to hate going to that island because all y'all do is just hack and foul, and we don't get no calls. I'm like, that's how it is, man. You gonna have to, that's the way we played, man. We sat down, we guarded you, and you know, if you're gonna win, you're gonna have some bumps and bruises along that way. You know, it's not gonna be easy.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, as long as they let you, you know, do that, I don't see there's nothing wrong with it. Nope. There's some leagues that I've been into where it's like, any touch is a foul, you know, like, so you got to adjust as a player. I think that's what I found really hard. You know, like in the VTB, for example, it was like super slow. I was like, what in the world? But it was like slow, but like physical. Like it was just, I don't know. It's just, you know, everybody was slower, but everybody was more physical underneath the basket. And he had like super quick guards, like Goodlock was in there. And I'm like, it was just such a like weird balance. It was like, no, you know, like, I don't know. It was a little bit weird, man. You go to Greece this year, and it was just they let you get away with whatever. I mean, especially like, okay, for us, like on the island, yeah, for sure, at home.
Yeah.
A lot of games, too, like especially the big teams, I'm like, you all get away with everything. Like
everything. We would start the game down 10 before jump ball. I'm like, you know, and that's just how it is out there. You're going to have to go in there and – try and scratch out a win. Every road game is tough out in Greece, and you know, that's I like that part of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but it was just it would get to be frustrating too, right? Because like, man, it's like this.
Oh no, for sure.
All right, you got to get used to it, like you said. You know, there's nothing you can do about it, and it wasn't even like because, like, it wasn't crazy strong as far as, like, physicals. I mean, that's one thing. It was, like,
no.
Oh, my God. Like, when I remember the VTB, you know, like, some guy that was in the VTB straight out of the NBA. I'm like, that's physical. I mean, that's just quick strength. Here, it was just a lot of, you know, it was just a lot of tic-tac stuff, like, holding, grabbing.
Yeah.
You know, like, just a little bit here and there. So, it was just
And refs don't call any of that. Any of that.
For sure not. But as far as teams, man, like where in Pesaro you had a lot of freedom, right? A bunch of rookies. Mm-hmm. After that, like where did you feel really comfortable, or like what would you say like you were best used other than Pesaro, of course?
I would say probably Cremona. I played in Cremona for 2 years. My third year was my first year there, and we had a very good season. I think we finished, I want to say third or fourth. Before playoffs, and I ended up re-signing to go back there before playoffs even started. So, you know, it was a great situation. Our coach had, you know, one coach of the year. We had a lot of great players. We had James Sutherland. We had Deron Washington from Virginia Tech. We had Tyrus McGee. We had two Italian players that are on the national team. So we had a very, very good team. We were well put together. You know, it's kind of like you were saying, you know, like I said, Americans are brought there to score. So basically we were just playing. And then as soon as the game gets into them clutch areas, it's like, okay, we're going to give Ellison the ball. And as soon as we, you know, give me the ball, tied up with 2-3 minutes left in the game, I just got to bring it home for him. And that's what we got good at. We never really beat teams by more than 5 or 6 points, but we were just steady at what we were doing and just did what worked. And then once we got to that point where we had to find a closer, it's just like, you know, give some, whoever's hot the ball. It was either me, Tyrus McGee. We had a center, Mark Cousine. You might know him.
Yep.
You know, we had a lot of veterans on that team, so we just knew how to play the game. We knew how to come out with the win some way, some way we can come out with the win.
Well, I mean, the most successful teams I've been on, it's just that is knowing your role and the character.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's character is like, if those fit, you can do anything. I mean, honestly, you might not have the best players, but you're gonna have a really good chance to beat a lot of good teams. And I know, you know, Milano, when I was in Italy, they had a good team, and for some reason they just didn't gel. And those teams in Europe, especially, you know, the big ones, and you see it every year in the EuroLeague. To me, that's the key to it, is like, how do those guys fit together?
Yeah.
You know, because if you have 2 or 3 guys that are like really good and they got different agendas, you can, it doesn't matter. Your budget's not going to play for you. And I mean, just look at Fenerbahce every now and then. Look at Cesc every now and then. It just, all it takes like 1-2 guys to just not fit the culture. And, you know.
See, and
go ahead.
I'm saying that's what I tell like young college players that are trying to go to Europe and, you know, trying to tell, you know, the younger generation. I'm like, look, you're not going to go over to Europe and average 20, 25 points a game. Like you watch people in the States and in the NBA averaging 25, 30 points a game. All those top Euro League teams, you know, Champions League teams, that you got 5, 6 players that average in between that 10 and 11 point range. And any of them on any given night can go off for 15, 20 points, you know, and that's how they play. You know, they play in a system that fits them. And that's very successful. Like, you know, like, I don't, it was, everybody was in that 9, 10, 11 point range. And you just have to play off of who's hot at that moment, basically.
Yeah. I think one of the best teams I've been on was Stelmet in Poland, who play EuroLeague and where we got you know, the top 8 in Euro Cup after. And I think all of us averaged, we had 8 or 9 guys averaging like 8 and 10, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those things, like, we knew who our closer was. You know, he's the boss most of the time. We had a Polish point guard, Koszarek, who used to just make big shots. And we just knew, like, what to do, when to do it. And it just took us a while in the beginning because we had a lot of good guys, right? But it was just a matter of finding that rhythm, you know, are you going to be aggressive early in the second, or are you going to wait your turn? But once we got clicking, you know, we'd be Panathinaikos at home. We'd be Lokomotiv on the road. We'd be Karsiaka. So, and then we went there and beat Unix in Unix, St. Petersburg. And it was just one of those things that once it got clicking, it was over. And, you know, we knew, like, okay, do what you do, and you know, at what point in the game you're gonna have to get those shots, and when not to get those shots, you know, when it's okay to pass them up somebody else. So that's a huge thing in Europe, to me. Now back to the NBA, man. What do you think about this tournament coming up right now? I don't even know what to call it. It's like a cup nowadays. Like, you know,
yeah, I know. It's like cups. I'm like, exactly what it's like. Yeah, feel like some type of soccer cup, but. I mean, there's pros and cons to it. You know, I think that for the teams that absolutely have a chance to win, I think that it's a good idea. But, I mean, you have some teams that it's like, it's really no point of you being there. So, I think for the safety reasons that, you know, I don't think that they should, you know, I think it should have just went straight to the 16 teams, whoever was top 8 in the West and top 8 in the East. And then just have the playoffs right away instead of having those, you know, last couple regular season games.
I think they're going to do those, like, basically those just scrimmages, exhibition games. That's what I see them as. Like, they just need some games before the playoffs so they don't just jump in. Because there's going to be rust, you know, I think. It's even if you worked out daily, it's just different. Yeah.
But the thing is, they got scrimmage games, but I think they're actually having games where, you know, because the Pelicans, for example, they're still trying to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, that's true. So it's going to be some big games
for them. So they're going to have some scrimmages, but then they're going to have, I think, 7 or 8 regular season games to determine who's going to get into those, you know, like some play-in games, determine who's going to get into the playoffs. And that's where I'm just kind of like, you know, yes and no, but it's going to be entertaining for sure because we've gone a long time without watching basketball. So
I know, man. Just the other day, it's like, I didn't have time to watch the TBT yet. It's like, I really wanted to because I heard everybody just raving about it. I'm like, was it that good? Or just like, you all just miss basketball that much? Like,
nah, TBT is, you know, TBT is always good. I like it. Always good.
Years. It's just, it's interesting. It's like one of those, it started as like kind of like AU tournament, right? And now it's now you get really, really good players in it. And I was watching it last year and it becomes more and more important, like, knowing the guys you play with and who you have on your team. You know, like, last year. And I was like, well, as soon as I looked at roster, I was like, oh, man. Oh, that's loaded. Like, EuroLeague guys. Like, top EuroLeague guys. But then I realized, I watched them play a few times. I was like, they can't win it. I was like, they're not going to win it. So at some point, it's just going to become team over, you know, over individual, like, individual skills.
Yeah.
And, That was interesting to watch, and I want to see it this year too. You know, especially towards later stages, you know, see how that works because those endings are crucial. Like I watched that thing like the last 2-3 minutes about every game, and I was like, oh man, I was like, tie game and you can win it, or you just wrong turnover going the other way, it's over. Like it's just that talk about pressure. That's like.
Yeah, I love how they do that ending. It's very entertaining to watch. Probably stressful if you're on the losing end of, you know, of the end of those games. But you know, I love the little Elam ending that they got. But like you said, I think in the past when nobody really knew about the TBT, it was just, you know, find out the best players you can get on the team and put them together. But now that it's getting more exposure, people are starting to call up people that they know and that who they played with and that who have chemistry. And that's why you're starting to see all these, you know, all these alumni teams. And this year they got a team full of players that played in Division II.
Yeah.
No. And you know, and they can hoop. Yeah. Like, you know, so.
They want to prove something too.
Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, those type of teams that have the chemistry might be better, you know, than the teams that have more talent because, you know, like you said, it's what you have all those teams full of talented players. At some point, you're going to have those ego problems and everybody like, okay, my turn, instead of just playing through, you know, whatever system and chemistry that you could have, like those alumni teams have.
Yeah. No, but to me, the ending is great. I was like, I feel like it's even better. You know, you got a shot, the last shot, 5 seconds, you know, all that stuff that we imagine, you know, like you shoot your last shot. But this one, really, like, you miss it, it's going the other way. It's over. Like, you know, you can't be over. So, like, you don't have, okay, I'm going to get my last shot in. I miss it. You know, like, regular game, we go to overtime where, you know, like, one of those things where this one is just, you keep going. Like, you miss it.
It's like it's like you're playing at the park at that point.
Exactly. But that's what makes it fun, too, I think, too. It's just, it's somewhat like they found a way to make it. You know, like those summer runs, you know, like, we're going 21. All right, cool. And then it's like, you know, it's 2020. Like, it's life and death right there.
Exactly. You know, and you can't foul. You got to play perfect defense because if you foul, you go right to the free throw line. And that, to me, that would probably be the worst way to lose that game is if, you know, it's decided on free throw line. But no, I'm with you on that.
That's the worst part, too, about it in general is just you can win on a free throw kind of thing, you know. If you ask me, that would be the last, you know.
Yeah.
Can't win on a free throw. Like, check up again. We found it.
Exactly. And like you said, you got to – it's – especially with, like, money on the line, too, you got to have – to me, you got to have a good team chemistry. Like, if I was ever to play in the TBT, I'd want to – win or lose, I'd want to do it, like, in the right way. You don't want to lose because somebody got, you know – too hard-headed and wanted to try and shine. You know, if I lose, I wanted to lose the right way. You know, hey, that team was just better. That team just made shots. Not
it's tough. When it's that kind of pressure, it's not like, it's you know, like, all right, last it's not like, okay, last 30 seconds I can make subs, right? I mean, the team can make a run over like that, you know, like they might need 6 points. They might be two back-to-back threes. You don't even get a chance to make a sub.
Exactly.
Like that. So I like that. You know, I like that because it just it puts pressure on guys to play both ways too.
Yeah.
You can't. Because you can't.
You don't want. Hey, you don't want to
be on the floor and be like, hey, move out of the way.
You don't want to be the one. Yeah. You don't want to be that one. Giving up the easy baskets during that time. That.
I know, right? Everybody gets so mad at you. It's crazy. Sure. Now going back to NBA, man. I know. Mentioned a little bit earlier, dad's a coach, and we talked about that. And there's a lot of people that think there's no defense in the NBA. And I always try to explain them. I'm like, it's do you understand how hard it is to play defense against the best of the best in a situation where you're mostly on an island? You know, like in Europe, you can pack it in, right? So you have this great
sport
in Europe. And, you know, like we played in Greece this year, you know, we pack it in. We make them make jump shots, make other plays, right? But, I mean, you get a guy like James Harden, right? He plays for your dad. You get a guy like Russell Westbrook. I mean, it's – we're like, oh, how can you not stop him? You know, and it's like it's not that easy. Like, you do all the defensive planning, too, as a coach in the NBA. You try to stop him, but, you know, this guy's like right now that just – they're impossible to stop to me. It's just how I see it offensively. With the rules, too. I mean, I get it, this whole hand-checking stuff. What's your take on that?
I mean, I say Luka Doncic said it the best. He said it was a lot easier to score in the NBA than it is in Europe, which is true because there's so much space in the NBA. I mean, you can't – I mean, the most important thing is that you can't have – a big in there for 3 seconds. You know, defense of 3 seconds is crucial. That's probably the most crucial thing because now you have those Russell Westbrooks, those Ja Morants, those, you know, people get to the lane in one dribble, and that's all you have to do. The NBA is all about beating your man. Whoever's in front of you, you have to beat him. And if you can do that, then everything else is basically just making a read.
Honestly, I can see that coaches in Houston too. Just like,
huh? Exactly.
I can see that coaches in Houston.
Hey, that's exactly what it is, man. I mean, you have, like I said, you have special for Houston example. You have them as, you know, they don't have a center, so they're basically in a five out spread. And when you have somebody like Russell Westbrook surrounded by four shooters, that's tough to guard when you are not allowed to really be in help position like that. Because Russell Westbrook can beat you by himself.
That's the thing that I'm trying to explain to a lot of Europeans too. I'm like, he just can't be there. So, like, if he goes there, he can't be stationary. So, he got to meet him at a rim. You know, like, the help side.
Exactly.
In Europe, you can stop him up high. You know, I can step up high and stop
him. You can already be in position before he drives, yes.
Yeah. Like, or I can discourage the drive even before. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, guys like Westbrook is just – he'll go by you, and it's going to be a foot race. Like, your help is going to be in a foot race with him going downhill. Your chance, you're going to meet him at a rim. To me, that's why Gobert is so valuable now for Utah, because he can be in those foot races, and he's long enough that's going to block a lot of shots. Yeah. Otherwise, there's not a lot of centers that are, like, useful defensively. You know, it's like they got to drop down way far because they can't really play up high on a ball screen because they're going to get crushed. You know, with this guy just being so good at one-on-one, they're going to kill you. If your big set a good screen, then it's over. It's coming right.
Yeah, exactly. And then the players in the NBA are just so talented. It's just like you don't really – there's really no scout report. Like if you were a coach in the NBA and you were writing up a game plan to how to stop Kevin Durant, like what would you say? You really can't say.
I would say good luck. That was it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm like, good luck, man.
That's what I'm saying. You can't. There's nothing that you can do
or
say to stop it. You. And even if there was a thing to stop, like for example with James Harden, you know James Harden is gonna step back. You know, step back threes or get to the rim, and you still cannot stop it. And that's one thing that is tough about the NBA is that they're gonna expose. You know, you're going to see what – like I said earlier, the craft, if you perfect what you do best And for James Harden, that's getting to the basket, drawing fouls, step back three, creating a shot.
He did that. To me, Harden is, you know, when Kobe said, oh, I was using the rules to my advantage, mm-hmm. nobody kind of jumped up in the air like, oh, yo, that's messed up. Harden didn't say it. Harden's just doing it. To me, that's
exactly.
He knows the rules. So he knows, like, as soon as he feels your hip on the shoulder, like, he's swiping the ball right at you.
Yeah.
Like, he knows, and to me, it's high basketball IQ. To me, it's not easy when you drive full speed to see somebody just stick a hand in front of you and just go with the ball right away. That's not like you think, like, it's not really like you're thinking about how to finish when you drive. You're thinking about a lot of things. To me, that would be at least, to me, that would be like, I'm not thinking about that. You know, like, I'm not thinking like, oh, I see somebody flying like a hand right in front of me and I'm going to swipe the ball back two free throws and I'm going to hit him with the ball when I drive. Like, you know, and they tried everything against James Harden. And people are like, nah, pick him up full court. I'm like, do you really want to pick up James Harden full court?
I mean, you've seen some of the defenses. You've seen some of the defenses literally just give him the whole right. They'll end up behind him, and like just force him to the basket so he doesn't get off to the step, you know, to the step back three. And I'm just like, the fact that you're that unguardable to where they're just giving you the lane to where it's like, okay, here, you're just gonna have to drive into the help is crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's just the NBA, like what people don't understand, you know, they don't play defense. Is they play the best defense they can within the rules. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And two, they're not guarding, like, you know, like there's no guy in the league in any rotation that can't do something elite. You know, even if it's just cutting and just crazy athletic, that's still elite, you know, like that's still crazy elite to me. You know,
yeah.
Cut and just throw it up there and I'm gonna finish over everybody. You know, just know your role, and it's difficult. That's why I like, yeah, I like watching EuroLeague. I watch it, but at the same time, I like watching NBA too, just because of that. I think you mm-hmm. gotta appreciate the talent they got, and you know, just the physical. You know, the physical part too is how hard they work to get in that kind of shape.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like you said, it's you know, like a lot of people that, you know, Europeans just assume that because everything is so high scoring, everything is that it's considered not playing defense. And in reality, it's kind of like, you know what, those, you know, them players are just so talented, and just by the NBA rules, it's tough. It's tough to guard. It's tough to ask somebody to guard James Harden for 48 minutes. Like, it's impossible. You're not gonna guard James. You're not gonna.
Europe, I got my money on Cliff.
He said on Cliff.
Hey, Europe, put him in.
I agree with that.
Full court.
Cliff would be ready for that full court press for 40 minutes. That's Cliff right there. I agree on that.
No, but it's just impossible. You know, they say Nikola Jokic now, and I'm like, yeah, but, you know, Sabonis was doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. To me, you can't really compare him anymore. Just because the rules have changed.
Yeah. So
you can't really compare what happened then. Well, they could play zone against MJ. They could be in the paint. They can put him down whenever they want to versus now. So you can't really say Harden is more talented than Jordan as far as scoring or, you know, who's better, because to me, it's like they don't play the same sport almost. You know,
exactly. It's, I mean, imagine, like, you know, just imagine if you weren't allowed to touch Michael Jordan, imagine what would happen. You know, it's two different things. Like,
so it's crazy, man. But yeah, that's why I feel like I always go to argument with a European. You know, all my European fellows, I'm like, jeez.
No, I'd have been my fair arguments as well.
Man, all right, Elston. Well, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and it's been a good talk. And we'll definitely stay in touch, and we'll see. I look forward to see where you sign next year.
All right, thank you. Appreciate you for having me.
All right, E.T.
All right, man.
All right.